Welcome back, everyone, from your lunch. Hopefully you got something good in. You had a nice long lunch there. Got to walk around town, see the sights, enjoy your afternoon. We're going to switch over to our risk policy working group. I know you all been waiting for this. You know, this is your opportunity to really weigh in on where we're going. Keep in mind, we are looking for finalization in June. So I will kick it over to Chair Ware. Thank you.
Thank you. The risk policy work group met on March 9th. We've also had several subgroups that have been working on specific topics. They've been meeting as well. As Dan just mentioned, we are on track for a June approval date. And I think we have a really strong presentation today from Jonathan and Roger. So I thank them in advance for all their work on this and look forward to the council discussion after.
Yeah, good afternoon, everyone. Jonathan Peros on New England Council staff. Really glad that Dr. Roger Brothers is here to present with me today. So we have a presentation in two parts on the risk policy. But I want to start, for a long time, I think the working group in the council has been asking, what does the risk policy mean for catch setting in fisheries? How does it work with ABC control rules? What does it mean for an individual's quota, for a TAL, for the PSE? And I think we're ready to talk about that today. I think it's been about 3 years of work coming to this point in time, but we're ready to show options about how that could all come together. The presentation will focus first on the risk policy concept as an independent tool. We want to talk about mechanics and things that the working group has been focused on since you heard from us last in January. And then we want to pivot and talk a little bit about risk policy application and use with ABC control rules. So we want to build to that, think about how the risk policy can be applied both qualitatively and quantitatively. So it's going to flip between Roger and I for as we go through the slides. There is no action that's required today, but as the chair had indicated, we'd really appreciate input as we move toward an approval of revisions at the June meeting, waiting at the June meeting, and a discussion about future use. So I just wanted to acknowledge members of the working group. They've been at this for a long time. Our first meeting was April 11th, 2023. And so today, again, is a culmination of a lot of hard work by the names of folks that you see on the screen. I want to thank members of the team at the University of Maine. They've done a lot of work to help us understand the mechanics of the risk policy, to stress test it, to point out places where it could be improved. And that's how we've arrived at this meeting and the plan for revisions in June, is through a lot of the hard work that happened through that contract. So I wanted to thank them at the outset. And the last thing, I just wanted to note the work that other council staff have been doing. Angelia Miller from Marist Collaborative. It has taken a village to get to this point, and I'm deeply appreciative for all the support along the way. So I want to go back in time a little bit and think and talk about what were the objectives of the risk policy. What did the council want to achieve when it adopted a new risk policy back in September of 2024? And I think these bullets match pretty well with the tool that we're going to describe today. So a tool that is overarching, that is not species or decision specific. It can be flexible. It is transparent. It can be broadly implemented. We talked about factors, the issues that the council cares about, and marrying policy preferences together with data. So the weighting and the scoring process that generates both qualitative and quantitative outcomes. We wanted a connection to ABC control rules, and Roger's going to talk about that for a good part of this presentation. We knew that it would take multiple steps to get there, and I think we are on track to do that. The council was very clear about staggering the work of Framework 68 for groundfish and having risk policy lead. That's the way this calendar year is shaping up, and so I think we're on track there. And so I think maybe putting these into perspective as we go through the tool, we talk about some of the revisions that we plan to make, and we're looking for feedback from the group. So this is really the engine of the risk policy. The council has identified a series of factors, key elements to characterize risk. There's a policy choice through a weightings process that is done by this group of individuals, voting members of the council. Again, that's policy preferences married with a scoring process that should be objective and based on agreed upon data and information that should tell us something about a level of risk for a particular factor. And those factors are summed, they're put together to provide an overall level of risk tolerance. So this is not changed over time. This is consistent with what we brought forward about a year and a half ago. Where we've tried to make some improvements in the communication of the risk policy is to lay it out in a more stepwise approach. And here the schematic has evolved a little bit over time. So we started with a fairly fluid process of the risk policy from the weightings process all the way through ABC control rules. What I want people to focus on and remember today is that risk policy is an independent tool. So we've tried to isolate that. That's different from the ABC control rule. That's in the black box on the right-hand side of your screen. This slide does show the same steps that we've been showing for a couple meetings now, beginning with the five factors, a weightings process that would apply to all managed resources by the council, the scoring of data and information, generating a Z-score, which again is this combination of weights and scores. And what we want to talk about today, some of the changes and the recommendations from the working group, is how that all comes together in a level of risk tolerance. The other thing that you'll see, that little call-out box, is that we can use that risk tolerance both qualitatively and quantitatively. We'll look to the council to help guide and steer those discussions. But the goal and some of the examples you'll see from Roger is that this can fully integrate with harvest control rules when desired. So back in January, we talked about some of the changes to factors. We went from 7 to 5. We talked about the specific goals of each of those factors, some revisions to scoring guidance. Today, we want to focus on updates to the mechanics of the risk policy. So we'll talk about a change to the shape of the curve, a change in the direction of scoring. We think it's more intuitive than it used to be. And we've tried to clean up the communication about when we talk about risk. So we've landed on risk tolerance, high and low. There were several other ways that we had described this in communicating what the risk policy outputs were in the past. We've tried to land on one way to talk about this, and so we're going to carry that forward in the materials. And this all should build to approval of the revised concept, the weightings, and use at the December meeting. The plan is that you'll see a couple new things in June, but most of this will have already been laid out for you at the January meeting and today. So just a refresher on the weightings process, and I know not every council member at the table has gone through weightings. The council did an example weighting process in April down in Mystic, Connecticut. I think we learned a lot from that process. And where we landed was that there'd be one weight for all council-managed species. So we call this our global weighting. That exercise is shown on the right-hand side of the screen. So the council members are asked to complete a matrix. This is done on paper. Only voting council members would participate. There were some guidelines around how many times you could weight a factor as being important or least important or critically important, I should say. And so that's one thing we'd appreciate input from the council on. But overall, this process would remain unchanged. You would expect to be doing basically the same thing in June in Mystic as you did back in 2025. So for the biomass stock status, this is one of the areas where we're going to start to roll out some of the updates and recommendations that are coming from the working group that are new today. The first is the direction of the scoring. And so in the past, when we thought there should be more risk tolerance, we were getting a negative value. We've inverted that in the scale on the bottom of the screen. And so positive values are now associated with more risk tolerance. We think that's more intuitive overall. That has an implication on the direction and the shape of the curve that Roger can talk about. But overall, we're trying to make this a little more user-friendly. And that was a big piece of information that came forward in several different venues. In terms of the factor itself, biomass stock status, this is a factor that really relates to the productivity of a stock. No real changes were proposed to the scoring that we had laid out initially. And in terms of the direction of how this can increase or decrease risk tolerance, it's both ways. It can move in both directions. So moving on to recruitment, this refers to the risk associated with the future productivity of a stock. We talked about this at the last meeting. This is really focused on, I would say, kind of the short-term outlook. We did have some new scoring guidance here that was developed by Dr. McNamee and Dr. Kerr, where we use a quantile approach and think about recruitment over the last 5 years and a trend associated with that. So that is an update that was made. This is one of the factors that moves in both directions, and so you can increase or decrease your risk tolerance based on the score. Moving on to climate vulnerability, this is about the risk associated with climate change. And so as climate vulnerability increases, risk tolerance would decrease. What is kind of new for the scoring in 26 is that the underlying data that we're using assesses climate vulnerability at the stock level. At the species level, excuse me. And so we want plan teams to use their expert opinion and weigh in on this at the stock level. And so going through that information, it was fairly high level. We feel that it would be appropriate for the plan teams using literature and other information to go through and help kind of bring the scoring down to that level of resolution. The other thing at play here, and we heard about it earlier in the meeting, is that there's been a lot of work done at the Northeast Center on a climate vulnerability analysis 2.0. We would hope to update the underlying data that's being used to score climate vulnerability with that information when that product is online. So we are grateful to be able to participate in that process and looking forward to using that information going forward. For the commercial fishery characterization, and I'll have a little more information on this in a couple of slides, this relates to the perceived health of the commercial fishery. And you know, here we're really thinking about this in terms of socioeconomic stress. And so for this factor and for the recreational factor that you'll see on the next slide, we're planning to ask a series of questions to look at a range of data and information around quota usage, around community impact, constraints of choke stocks, overall revenue, asking the APs for their input to try to assess and get at this question about the level of stress, socioeconomic stress. The direction of this factor moves from neutral to being more risk tolerant. That is a change, and we laid it out at the last meeting. And so this is one thing that I think is important for the council to consider for both commercial and recreational as we move through. So for the recreational factor, again, this is in very, very similar rationale to what I just talked about for the commercial fishery characterization. I want to say a little bit more about this idea of stress. And I think when we talk about that, we're thinking about stress relating to vulnerability, both of a fishery and of the resource. And so, you know, how close would a system be to failure? How resilient is the fishery and those participants and the communities? How resilient are they to shock? How much capacity do they have to absorb major disturbances? Those are the kinds of things that we want to try to characterize with both the recreational and commercial fishery characterization. On the recreational side, we can go through and talk a little bit about areas of focus. So again, this is set up as a series of questions that the plan teams would be asked to respond to and answer. We've made some adjustments to the list on the recreational side. So what is new here, based on some feedback from council member, is quota utilization. Here we have stocks with ACLs. We're confident in the data that is available around, certainly for Gulf of Maine cod and Gulf of Maine haddock. There were other stocks that were brought up as part of that conversation, such as pollock. Winter flounder is another one that I think we would need to examine those data streams more to think about how you could go through a scoring process. But the underpinning questions and the areas of focus have not changed much over time. For the recreational side, this still includes fleet diversity that comes from the State of the Ecosystem report. We look at angler trips, data quality, PSE. We're thinking about the quality of MRIP information there. Management consistency. So are there wide swings in what the bag limits are year over year, and then seeking input from recreational advisors. On the commercial side, we are envisioning some slight changes in terms of kind of the data that's being used to go through the scoring process. So this isn't a change in focus. It's really thinking about what data will the plan teams use to score. I want to talk a little bit about communities here, because this is an area where I think we have had a lot of support from the social science branch in terms of thinking about what information is available to best characterize this question. And so one of the areas that we've decided to kind of look towards here is the Port Commercial Fishing Activity Indicator that appears in the 2026 State of the Ecosystem report that Dr. Kara Kappa presented on earlier today. We had initially started with primary and secondary ports. We thought we could do better. I think we're on track for that. In this indicator that looks at the number of dealers in a port, number of permits, landings, and revenue, I think it's a more holistic picture in trying to understand what is stress and vulnerability in a commercial fishing community. And so that's one of the reasons that we're changing there. And I think that is the sentiment that we bring to the further exploration of data streams for each of these and building in that scoring guidance that you'll see in June. So we've thought we could do a little bit better there, and I think we're making good progress. So those are the updates on the factors, and I'll hand it over to Roger for the demonstration.
Thanks, Jonathan. So my name is Roger Brothers. I'm from the University of Maine, and a group of us at UMaine, including myself and Lisa Kerr and Alex Schneider, have been working with council staff and the Risk Policy Working Group to kind of look at a lot of the technical details of the risk policy and how we go from these thoughts of these different factors and their different situations and combine them into a risk tolerance, and then also how that might integrate with the control rules. So that's a lot of what I'll talk about today. So Jonathan outlined this kind of overarching summary of the risk policy, but I'll go through it again here. So basically, the new risk policy has these five risk factors that comprise different biological risks, different socioeconomic risks. And for each of those five factors, we go through these two processes. First of weighting them, which is a policy decision representing how influential each individual factor is in the overall risk tolerance. And then also scoring the factors with actual data and looking to characterize the state of that stock for that particular factor. Those five factors that get combined, the weights and the scores, into this single Z-score metric that informs a mathematical equation to calculate a single risk tolerance. And so that's the general process, and I'll walk through each of those steps individually, and then also demonstrate how the scoring and everything plays out for the 22 groundfish stocks. So this is a description and a representation of the factor weighting process, which some of you have went through last April and Jonathan described. But basically, each of the council members will rank these five factors that are in the risk policy: biomass, recruitment, climate vulnerability, recreational fishery, commercial fishery, on a scale of 0 to 4, with how important they think they should, each of those factors should be with respect to the ultimate risk tolerance level. And so those plots that you see are for each of those factors, the responses from different council members. So for biomass, almost 11 council members rated that as a 4, as critically important to the eventual risk tolerance was. For some of the other factors, there's a more wider dispersion across members. So eventually, each of those individual ratings by council members get averaged on that 0 to 4 scale, and that's the top row of that table showing how influential that factor should be from 0 to 4, and then it gets kind of normalized, so it's a proportion of 1, and that's what the bottom row is with 5 factors. Each of the 5 factors having equal weight would be a 0.2 or 1/5. So in that 0.2, 0.21, you can see kind of the relative importance based on last year's mock weighting exercise for the 5 factors that are ending up in the current risk policy. This is a synthesis of all of the factors in the scoring. And so this is the rubric that has been settled on for all 5 factors. And this is that objective characterization of the state of each stock. So as Jonathan mentioned, for each one individually, they're organized so that a score of 0 represents a kind of neutral risk tolerance. So for biomass, that's near your biomass target. So around the SSB reference point, and as biomass goes up, we move to the right and accept a higher risk tolerance, and as biomass decreases, we move to the left and have a lower risk tolerance. And for each of the 5 factors, they're organized in that way. So for recent recruitment levels or a young fish in the population, average recruitment recently, if it's near the long-term average, that's scored at a 0, so an intermediate risk tolerance. And if recruitment has been high recently, we move to the right and see a higher risk tolerance. And if it's low recently, we move to the left and see a lower risk tolerance. And through the 5 factors for climate vulnerability, and then as Jonathan mentioned, the remaining 3, climate vulnerability can only decrease your risk tolerance. So if a stock is not thought to be vulnerable to climate change, that's an intermediate level of risk tolerance. But as that climate vulnerability increases, the risk policy becomes less risk tolerant. Whereas for the commercial and recreational fisheries, it's the opposite of that, where socioeconomic stress in the fishery and in the system is scored at an intermediate risk tolerance. And as that stress increases, the risk policy recommends increasingly higher risk tolerance. So that's the scoring summarized across the 5 factors. And this is a demonstration for using the most recently available information for the 22 groundfish stocks. We scored the biological factors, SSB recruitment and climate vulnerability. And you see that for a stock like Western Gulf of Maine cod, that's towards the top of the table or of the plot, that's where we have the lowest risk tolerance stocks. So at Western Gulf of Maine cod has biomass that's well below the threshold, recruitment has recently been low, and it's moderately vulnerable to climate change with a negative impact on the population dynamics. By contrast, Gulf of Maine haddock is at the bottom of the plot. SSB or biomass is well above the target. There have been multiple large recruitment classes recently, and it's less vulnerable to climate than some of the other stocks. And if you look across the 22 stocks, you can kind of see that they all fall in a slightly different place for each of those individual factors. And I'm happy to return to this or any of our plots if people have questions. But the next step is to combine those 5 factors, so the 3 that I showed on the previous slide, and the commercial and recreational fishery factors into a single value. And so they're all combined into the Z-score. And then the working group decided to use a logistic function, it's called, to convert that Z-score into a single metric or recommended risk tolerance. And so that's what we're seeing. The Z-score is on the bottom. That's an aggregated metric across the 5 factors that includes the weightings and the scorings. And then the logistic curve is the shape of the equation you see, and it calculates the Y-axis, which is a recommended probability of management success. Basically, when this value is high at the top, that's saying you want to be very confident that the management measure you set will be successful. And so that represents a low risk tolerance. And by contrast, when you move that value lower towards 0.5 in the bottom right of the screen, that's a higher risk tolerance, saying the conditions and the weightings and the scores reflects a situation that might be able to accept a higher risk tolerance. And there's a few reasons. The logistic function can accommodate changes in the number of factors over time while still remaining in the same kind of recommended probability space. So an addition or subtraction of a factor in the future won't require a major change to the calculations. And the other thing about this particular shape is the symmetry allows those zero scores in the rubric to align with an intermediate level of risk tolerance. And then as you move away from it, both in the high risk direction and the low risk tolerance direction, we see a slowing down of the slope. And so it's a little bit more responsive at those intermediate risk tolerance levels and more stable if you eventually get to a low risk tolerance state or a high risk tolerance state. So those extremes are harder to achieve, but more stable if you're there. And if we do the calculations using those same scores that I showed a couple of slides ago for the 22 groundfish stocks, this is where we see the stocks fall out on the curve. And I think it's important to note that the individual factor scores that I showed previously only had the biological factors, but I am including in this calculation the recreational and the commercial fishery factors. But for this exercise, I'm assuming an intermediate score of 2. So that's an intermediate risk tolerance. It's right in the middle of where those two fishery factors can be scored. And we see with that assumption, we see Western Gulf of Maine cod towards the top of the curve, which is a lower risk tolerance. And Gulf of Maine haddock all the way on the bottom right, which is the highest risk tolerance of the 22 groundfish stocks, and the other stocks would fall in between. Now, to look at how impactful those two fishery factors might be, I've done the calculations again, but only for those two stocks, so Western Gulf of Maine cod and Gulf of Maine haddock, but changing those assumptions to now have the dot is the same dot from the previous slide, where it's that intermediate score, that intermediate risk tolerance of a score of 2 for the two fishery factors, but the colored line represents the range of possible outcomes if the two fishery factors are scored at their most extreme values. So you can, for cod, I think it's particularly insightful, the two fishery factors, if they have a different score, either their minimum of 0 or their maximum of 4, can pretty significantly impact where you fall along the curve, potentially even moving it between these colored bands of low and intermediate risk tolerance, which I will note have not been decided by the Risk Policy Working Group. Those are my demonstrations just to kind of keep our bearings for where high risk and low risk are on the plot. And that is something that the working group will be discussing soon, like how to define those particular risk tiers. So just to kind of sum it all up, we have these global factor weightings for the five factors, which represent your policy decision on how influential each of those five factors will be. We have the empirical or objective factor scoring that uses data to quantify the state of the stock for those particular factors. Those get combined into a single Z-score, which eventually are used to calculate a single quantitative metric or value that represents the recommended risk tolerance that incorporates all five of those factors, both weighting and scoring. And then the box on the right is kind of where we're going to go in the next half of the presentation, looking at how that can be used to influence ABC control rules, with just starting to kind of discuss the idea that when the risk policy recommends low risk tolerance, so when you're at the top in that red band, you might want to set your ABC farther from the overfishing limit. And by contrast, if your risk policy is recommending a high risk tolerance, you might be able to set the acceptable biological catch closer to the overfishing limit. But we'll get more into the details of different ways that might work in the next part of the presentation. I think we're going to pause for just questions and things at this point on the risk policy, or Jonathan has some more.
Just two quick slides to wrap up, and I'll take them 25, then 24. So in terms of the work that is ahead for the Risk Policy Working Group, I think we feel pretty comfortable with where we're at with the weightings process and the Z-score process and that equation. As I mentioned, there's still some updates and data to refine around factors, but and the commercial and recreational factors, but the topics that we've settled on are final. So I think it's just the final piece here is solidifying the data streams, like the example that I gave for communities. And then the other piece that Roger alluded to is the qualitative interpretation of the risk policy. So letting the working group talk a little bit more about risk zones or risk bands, and then coming back to the council in June. So two things to report back on in June. I think we are on track for the council to approve those revisions. We do have a working group meeting scheduled on June 3rd. We'll have subgroups that are active to get that work done ahead of the June 3rd meeting. So I'd expect most of the materials to be completed and available for public consumption in early in the month. And then just to step back in terms of the outlook, a lot of this is what we've been saying. We think it's worth saying multiple times. That outlook in June is to really, I think, set the council up for use of the risk policy later in calendar year 2026. We can talk about whether that's qualitative or quantitative. That's a council decision. And that relates to, I think, future work and getting together with the council's SSC in terms of how the SSC would think about use, understanding the relationship with the ongoing work for Groundfish Framework 68 and ABC control rules, and then interfacing on thinking about communication with groups like the Climate and Ecosystem Steering Committee. So I think that is it for part one of the presentation.
Thank you both. It's a lot of work that the Risk Policy Group has done in 3 years. We can say that when we first started risk policy, Dr. O'Keefe was actually on the risk policy working group. We had a different executive director, so it's been a long ramp. I don't think we expected it, but I think we actually benefited from this long ramp up to where we are today. A lot of good things through this. Maybe I'm partial because I'm on the risk policy working group, but that's okay. And I think a lot of us around the table has some of the folks have changed since we've started this. So really, some of us are a little ahead of the game. Some of us are maybe a little behind. But I just want to point out, this is your opportunity, really. Any questions? Really looking for making sure that when we walk out of this meeting today, I got you for a second, Jackie. I want people to be comfortable to say they know what it does, they understand it, and how it works. And if you have some confusion, any confusion, this is your opportunity to really dig into it. We set aside a chunk of time today to really make sure people are comfortable with this. And it's not just the factor scoring, but also the weighting component, because we plan on moving forward in June, even with the weighting component itself. So have at it. I have Ms. O'Dell first, and then I have Terry Alexander.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Chairman. So just to take a step back for a minute, when I think about the ceiling and the floor, the ceiling is the OFL. The floor is to be decided, or is it 50, an ABC of 50%? Or what range are we, and I know we're going to have another presentation on this, but what is our, and we'll have a discussion about PSTAR and all the above, but what are we talking about in terms of the range of risk? Like, is there, in setting our ABCs, do we have a range that we're thinking about? I mean, right now we have 75% FMSY. We have a ceiling, we have an OFL, but we have nothing for what we could come up with and say that in level of risk, we only want to consider an ABC of 20% of the OFL. I mean, I'm just curious at what point, where are we structuring our range, if that makes sense? Maybe not, but
I think it's a good question. I think that's why we wanted to, I think we'll get to that in part two of today.
Okay.
But it's where we land in the range isn't the sole discretion of the council's risk policy. It's going to be based on how the council designs the risk policy and a harvest control rule. And so I think the council could choose to be very conservative, as you're suggesting, but the council will have another say, and I think another bite at that through the development and groundfish of an APC control rule.
Okay. And then I know I really harp on the factors that we're looking at, and I really appreciate the additional work that's gone into thinking about the commercial and recreational characteristics. I just continue to feel that, and I realize we need to come up with an engine that's global and applies to all of our FMPs, but I get concerned that we're not. I actually was really, there was a lot presented this morning in the State of the Ecosystem report looking at seafood production, thinking of, you know, cost and revenue, a lot of different elements that we're starting to bring in. Granted, it's on the ecosystem level, not on the stock level or an FMP level, but there's a lot of cost, revenue, more information, I think, that would be helpful to going into just like for the commercial characteristics and just having it be only like the utilization of a stock. Another thing that I worry about with, you know, I'm sorry to go groundfish focused, but, you know, are we asking the right questions that are going to help us to understand, like, you know, Western Gulf of Maine cod? If you look at it in isolation, you may not think about it in terms of, you know, the statute, you know, how much it's needed, not just Gulf of Maine cod, but to access other groundfish stocks within the complex, you know, what the lease value's been in order to harvest other stocks. So I still really get stuck on the that we haven't thought enough. And I don't know, maybe we can loop that into some sort of an ABC control rule discussion after the fact and have like a global engine, and then it gets more specified when we get to like the FMPs or the ABC control rules, and every fishery is different. But I'm really concerned that we're missing like the performance of the fishery and how it's being conducted, and the importance or not of a stock, you know, who's participating in that fishery. Is it 50 permits? Is it 350 permits? Like, you know, what is that universe?
Jackie, could you let a whole host of things. Sorry, I think yes, Jonathan yes, is very prepared yes, to answer yes. that. Thank you.
Yeah, because I've every time we have this, like, look at Jonathan, and yeah, so thanks.
Yeah, thank you, Jackie. You've pushed the working group to think pretty critically about this, and you came to the meetings where I think we looked at over 50 different possible factors. So we started pretty wide, we narrowed down. I've put the list back on the screen here of things within that commercial factor, the quota utilization, communities, which has several pieces of data streams now that we're talking about, revenue, the constraining species, choke stocks, and then that advisory panel, that expert input that I think people really wanted to see. So I think within this, the risk policy can be flexible. We've said that you could add factors, you can take them out, we could increase data streams. I hope for June we could settle on this and move forward and see how it goes, and then be flexible and reflect on that even later in the calendar year. I think there's a lot of value in testing this and trying it out at this point in time. The other thing I want to say is in Dr. McManus's presentation earlier today, he talked about fishery performance reports, and there's been a lot of thinking about integrated documents and how do we just do business a little differently in aggregating data and serving it back to the council. And a lot of the pieces that you're talking about, if they don't have a home directly in the risk policy, I think they have a home in some of the reports that we're thinking about and trying to develop.
Thank you. Up next, Mr. Alexander.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. Thanks you guys for the presentation. So could you go to slide 18, Jonathan? I found this 18. No. Yeah, no, go up one. Maybe it's 17. Shit. Shoot, excuse me. I don't know. So you, I'm sorry, but you had this box, and on one side you had low tolerance, low risk, and high risk. There. I don't think this is exactly the same one, but anyway, it looked like low risk. Should be all in the red to me, and then the high, actually vice versa, the high risk should be in red and the low risk should be in green.
It may be a confusion about low risk and low risk tolerance. Okay. I don't know if that's what you're thinking about, but
maybe they're totally different things, and I'm not
I think this is intending to say that when conditions are such that you need to be cautious, that's when you would have a low risk tolerance and be in the red box and kind of go slowly with your and cautiously. I think that's a little bit different from a low risk situation.
Okay.
And I don't know if that's what you're thinking about.
Yeah, I think there was another box that actually had, but that's okay. That I'll look it up myself but I'm confused on how this would work. Okay, so much to like Jackie's question. I mean, right now we get a number out of the assessment scientists that goes to the PDTs. The PDTs come up with the OFL, right? Am I correct on that? Okay. The PDT comes up with the OFL, and then we have a rule right now, 0.75 FMSY. And so we know what that number is once it comes out of the PDT. So we can do a calculation on this. Does the PDT get to look at this and figure out where it is on the risk tolerance and decide whether it's 0.75 FMSY or 0.50 or who gets to make that decision?
Yeah, it's a good timing question too. So Terry's talking about applying the ground fish ABC control rule. There's four different tiers and a preamble. That's still how the council will need to apply to go through its catch setting process. So the plan team will go to the SSC with information. SSC will make those recommendations. The risk policy, as those two are constructed right now, they don't work together quantitatively. It's not a match. That's why we're planning to develop framework 68 and to revise the ABC control rule so that the risk policy can quantitatively integrate with the harvest control rule. So outputs from this process will mean something in what the ABC is relative to the OFL. If you were going to take this forward qualitatively later this year and continue to use the harvest control rule, I think what the plan teams would bring to the SSC is to say, we've gone through this scoring and weighting process. We've landed with this outcome in a risk tier. It's low risk tolerance. I think that's a step beyond the matrix we currently have. And it's a piece of information for the SSC to consider alongside applying the current control rule of 75%. So there's a few different steps to and a progression to get to that full integration. Roger's going to do a great job talking about how it all works, thankfully. But I think it's a good point, Terry, and trying to just piece this together and kind of where are we at when the risk policy is being used quantitatively relative to the kind of control rule that we have on the books.
I'll just add that I think both of your questions are similar. And I think the answer to Jackie's question specifically about our range of risk tolerance is we do have a finite range of risk tolerances. It ranges from 50% probability that your management measure will be successful to 100% probability that your management measure will be successful. How that integrates with an ABC control rule, that's the spot that is down the road and hasn't been ironed out yet. And so I'll show today a few different options and some of the implications of each of those choices. But I think the key is that the risk policy can generate a high risk tolerance recommendation or a low risk tolerance recommendation. And that's kind of in isolation. And then through framework 68 for groundfish in July and August, the nuts and bolts and the details of how that exactly translates into an ABC will be determined. And it's not specified yet by just this shape on this curve. This will influence it a little bit, but I think just qualitatively to describe it, one like just logical thought process would be if you're in the middle, that's maybe around 75%. And if you're in the high risk, you can go closer to the OFL. And if you're at low risk, you go a little bit farther away from it. I mean, that's like the broad strokes of how something like this might work. And like I said, we'll talk in the second half about some of more of the details, but I think it's important to note that the risk policy is on its own. And then exactly the way it translates into the ABC has not yet been decided.
And that's where I'm getting confused, because I couldn't understand how that all came together. So, all right, thank you. Appreciate that.
No, that was super helpful. I appreciate that exchange, because obviously there's two components to this. There's the risk policy and there's the ABC control rule. So they are going to interact, but right now we're trying to make sure everyone's comfortable with the risk policy before we jump to that. But that was fine. I appreciate that, Terry. Up next is Mr. Pierdnock.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and thank you for your presentation. If you could go to slide 14, there's been some additional items added recreationally, which is good to see. One that's still missing is revenue, and just from a comparative standpoint, commercial to recreational, you're not exactly evaluating apples to apples with revenue, for example, of the cod catch and what that total revenue is. But the fact that it's missing recreationally, there still is a revenue impact as a result of tackle sales, marinas, boats, the whole deal. And those metrics and those costs are out there that could be integrated into that. The fact that it's not here, is it still in the works? Is it not being considered? This is evolving. I'm just curious. I want to make sure these metrics are such that with that missing, that properly would evaluate economic impacts as a result of a decision recreationally. And without having that there, I'm concerned with that.
So I think this is the list that the working group will continue to refine scoring guidance on for June. I think this is an area that we'd want to catalog and run down those data streams to understand the kind of information that's available from tackle and sales and kind of this whole universe of the economy that exists around recreational fishing. And I think right now we don't have data streams that are identified for a scoring process that would occur there. So I think our plan has been to proceed with these six. We have a catalog, and we included it in the materials today of ideas that have come forward that we want to keep working on. And sometimes we agree, we need to figure out what the information is to do the scoring with. So I think that's be kind of a two-part answer for you.
Thank you. So I'm just trying to understand the outcome with the risks and so on, that if you had a situation where the stock bio, let's go black sea bass, it's always a great, haddock, the biomass is high, but we have a constraining issue with cod. And if you took a fishery management measure that resulted in a significant decrease to the seasons and bag limits, there'd be an economic impact to that. I would just want to make sure that's reflected in the decision. And that's what I'm at. Is it or isn't it? And maybe we can't answer that question. And that disconnect is what I'm concerned with.
Dr. O'Keefe?
Using that as an example.
Thank you. I'm going to repeat a little bit of what Mr. Perro said, that there are certainly more ideas around this, and the Risk Policy Working Group has been collecting those ideas, cataloging them. It was also pointed out we've been doing this for 3 years. I want to really emphasize that we cannot let perfection get in the way of something that is much better than what we currently have. And I think to your specific questions, Mr. Pierdnock, I'd ask, how do we measure that now? How are we accounting for that now? And what this approach is proposing includes more of that type of information for management decisions than we've ever looked at before or currently do now. So while we're not maybe including every single metric factor that everyone thinks we should at this moment, we can evolve, we can iterate. But I do want to challenge the council around a little bit of explaining what works well now and why maybe we wouldn't want to try something alternative that we've put 3 years of work and really a lot of thought into. So I'm not advocating of how the council moves forward with this, but as we talk about things that where there are still questions, maybe think to yourself, are we accounting for that now? Do we remotely even ask those questions around how we set advice these days? And is this a step forward? And if you think it might be a step forward, but you're not sure that it's really capturing what it needs to, then that's where we can continue to catalog ideas and continue to iterate.
I did want to highlight, you did bring up one other thing. You talked about the potential of needing COD to get Haddock. And I think when you, Jonathan, and I sat down, we discussed that. And we actually didn't put it as a recreational factor because that choke stock component is actually in the commercial factor. And it's the same thing for commercial guys as it is for rec. So we didn't want to put it in there because, in essence, we would be double counting it. So it's still being captured, but it's being captured somewhere else. So I just wanted to make sure you understood that as well. Okay. Up next, I have Jeff Smith.
Yeah, thanks, Mr. Chairman. I had a question similar to Terry's, hopefully not as long as his, but similar. I just want to make sure that the SSC is going to be able to have access to our degree of risk tolerance when setting quotas for a stock. And I know that's the relationship between our risk policy and our ABC control rule. And you're probably going to be covering the control rule later, but I think that's what I want to be reassured of, is because right now we're locked into 75% FMSY. And when we do this, the council will be able to communicate to the SSC, we're willing to be more risk tolerant with this stock because of X, Y, and Z factors. Is that where we're heading with this?
Yes. And I think, as a work group member, you'll get the chance to work on, I think, in the short term, that qualitative interpretation of what the Z-score value means relative to a risk zone. So I think that's something we would expect to bring forward in June.
And then the second question I have is, I've always been hung up between the weighting and the scoring. So I just want to make sure I'm clear. The weighting is done by the council globally. So we look at the five factors and we say we think this is important or not, and that applies to everything. And then the scoring can be done on a species by species basis within the groundfish plan or for scallops, or on an individual species basis. Is that correct?
On a stock basis, so even beyond a species, but at the stock level. And so yeah, that's where the differences will come in.
And so when we're doing the scoring, so not the weighting, the scoring, the first three factors to score are based on some pretty agreed upon stuff, stock stat, SSB, recruitment, climate vulnerability. Those are kind of known, and I won't say without judgment, but they're known. We can go someplace and look for those. The last two are about the stress level on the commercial fishery and the recreational fishery, and I'm just curious, what information will we use to score those last two when they're not like the other three? I think they're a little bit more subjective, maybe. Or where will we go to get information on how to score those last two?
Yeah, thanks for that question. So for quota utilization, we can use year-end catch reports. So data generated from NOAA fisheries is the primary source there. On communities, we've identified an indicator within the State of the Ecosystem report that's all based on information collected by NIMFS. Revenue, again, is a metric where you would use where you get price information from the dealers, and so that, again, that's calculated. That's in the CAMS database. Constraining species and choke stocks, I think this does take some interpretation by the plan teams and probably the advisors as well, and then that advisory panel input. So on the commercial side, we've identified several data streams. They're all coming from NOAA fisheries. They're all coming from a database that the CAMS database that we use in our routine management.
And then those things will be converted into the, I was looking at slide 12 on the stress stuff. So We'll run some numbers on the three things that you just said for the commercial fishery, and based on those numbers, we'll say that's moderate stress or high stress or low stress.
So I think we, the way that we've positioned this to date is that we would look at a, would look at information over like 3 years or 5 years and look at trends in revenue or in utilization. And so we would, depending on the slope of that line, we would be thinking about, would you be more risk tolerant or not? So that's the, it's not just a single point in time. We're trying to use a time series to generate an answer for each of these.
Ms. Griffin?
Yeah, I just, to help with the commercial and recreational fishery characterization, I would just suggest people might want to have document 3 open, page 22 and 23. It kind of runs through the questions and how that might turn into scoring.
Further questions, comments from the council? Ms. O'Dell.
So I know we've been working on this for 3 years as a council, but there's obviously a tremendous amount of work that's gone into thinking about this from staff and from the committee members. So for the other part of us that have not, I mean, there's so much. I tried to listen to the last committee meeting as much as I possibly could to try to bring myself up to speed on the weighting, the scoring, the process, the factors, the development of the new commercial characteristics. Thank you. But this is pretty important. I think it's a huge step up from where we are right now. But, you know, for those of us that aren't involved in the weeds that the other council members are, you know, we do have some, I have reservations still, but I do feel this is a huge step up and appreciate all the hard work that's gone into all of this to date. So I just wanted to make that comment. Thanks.
Thank you for that. So the risk policy also has another term of reference, and it's number 3. We haven't dug into that in a while. It's talking about communication. It's like, how are we going to communicate this out to not only around the table, to our other partners, but also to the general public? So in the spirit of that, I would actually like to ask, is there anyone in the public here, either in the room or online, that would like to kind of ask some questions about this? Because keep in mind, this is something that the council does plan to move forward with. And, you know, obviously, if there's questions in the public, we would like to understand, make sure the public itself understands what this project is doing. So I open it up to anyone in the room at this point. Anyone online would like to speak to or have questions about our risk policy? Seeing none. Okay, well, thank you. We will kick it over to part 2, where we're actually going to focus a little more into the ABC control rule component and how risk policy will integrate that. So I will kick it back to, I believe, Dr. Brothers.
Thanks. Yeah, so now we'll talk about kind of after we've talked about the risk policy, so how do we get to a stock-specific measure of high risk tolerance or low risk tolerance, what that might actually mean in terms of quantitatively integrating those numbers with an ABC control rule. And so we've kind of gone through this a few times, that we've got the factors weighting, the scoring, those combine into a single value that gives us a recommended level of risk tolerance. I'm all the way at the back or at the front. And so I think when we're talking about an acceptable biological catch, just to kind of make sure we're all talking on the same page and from the same starting point, typically the ABC is set below the overfishing limit to account for scientific uncertainty. And in principle, the magnitude of how far away the ABC is from the overfishing limit could depend on the degree of scientific uncertainty. So typically right now for groundfish, we have a relatively static control rule that says to account for that scientific uncertainty, we go to 75% of FMSY. In a risk policy integrated approach, like the options that I'll show in the next few slides, the degree of that buffer would also change based on that recommended risk tolerance level. And so in kind of the schematic, you're seeing on the right of the slide, that risk tolerance level is on the bottom axis and the scientific uncertainty is on the Y axis. And so you might imagine that in situations where your risk tolerance is low and your scientific uncertainty is high, that might be the combination where you want to go as far away from your OFL as you're willing to go. By contrast, if your scientific uncertainty is low and your risk tolerance is high, you might be on the bottom right box and be willing to go closer to your OFL. And so I think just at the start, it's helpful to think about, in the past, we've typically only considered scientific uncertainty, but this new risk policy integrated approach allows some flexibility for going farther and closer from the OFL. Even under the same level of scientific uncertainty, you can go a little bit farther or a little bit closer, depending on the results of the risk policy. And so by using the risk policy directly in ABC control rules, it incorporates a wider range of criteria when setting catch advice. So climate impacts on stock dynamics, socioeconomic considerations are directly incorporated and considered in the risk policy. And so risk policy integrated control rule would also, by definition, use that information directly when setting catch advice. And as we've alluded to a few times, the way the risk policy is developed allows for factors to be added or changed a little bit later. And so there are opportunities to add even more factors down the line if the council wishes to do so. And so specifically, this would allow ABCs that are closer to the overfishing limit and farther from the overfishing limit, and would provide the objective criteria for when to move in each of those directions. So could give the SSC information on when they should be a little more aggressive when setting catch advice or a little more cautious. But there are many different options, and so we'll talk about a few of them, not to say that this is the way it will be happening, but a few different approaches for the way it could work. And basically, there are two distinct approaches for determining the scientific uncertainty. The first is what I've labeled A here as a simple percentage buffer. So for example, for groundfish, the ABC is now 75% of the overfishing limit. It does change with status a little bit, but that's basically what it is. And that's kind of the schematic on the left, where you have an overfishing limit and the ABC is decremented some amount below that. We use that for our groundfish FMP now. An alternative approach would be to use a distribution or probability-based approach where the ABC is determined by an acceptable probability of overshift fishing. You've probably heard the term P star. I won't get into the details of how it works, but that's kind of that bell curve on the right where we set a distribution that reflects the uncertainty in our overfishing limit, and exactly where the ABC is depends both on that and the P star, the acceptable probability of overfishing that's been defined. That's currently used in the, by the New England Council for the some of the small mesh multi-species stocks and for scallops. And so both of these are used by the council, and both of them could integrate the risk policy quantitatively and directly. And so this is just two demonstration schematics for one way this might work for a percentage of the OFL or FMSY approach that's very similar to what's currently used for groundfish, but uses the risk policy to determine what that buffer might be. And so both of these schematics have the same risk bands just to identify where we are in terms of risk. The recommended probability of management success, so that output of the risk policy, is what we're seeing on the x-axis. And on the y-axis would be that potential proportion of the overfishing limit that could be used to define the ABC. And so on the left, we see a kind of tier approach where if you're in that middle band, you might get 75%. If you're in the high risk tolerance, so in the green band, you might get something higher than that. And if you're in the low risk tolerance band, you might get something lower than that. I've made up the divisions between the risk tiers and the buffers within each band just to kind of demonstrate how this might work. Those are all decisions that would have to be made through the Framework 68 process with the Groundfish Committee. The alternative would be to do a continuously changing buffer, which is shown on the right side, where the risk policy output is used directly and continuously to change dynamically that buffer. And so it's less of a binned approach where you have steps between these risk tiers, but as the risk policy changes, the buffer between the control, between the overfishing limit and the ABC also changes. So both of these, again, I've kind of made up this relationship. The exact top level or as close to the OFL as you might be willing to allow and as far away that you might be willing to allow are, again, decisions that have to be made. Both of these, as they're shown here, are kind of centered around that 75%. So the intermediate value is defaults to a 75% of the overfishing limit, and you move higher or lower than that based on the risk policy results. And so this is the same kind of thing, but again, showing for the point estimate or the point that I'm showing on these plots are where that fishery factor assumption that I've used to do these calculations is that intermediate risk tolerance for both the recreational and commercial fishery factors. And the line represents where you might be given this formulation of these two control rules for different extreme ranges of those two fishery factors. So there is considerable movement based on where those fishery factors end up, which I think is one of the benefits of these risk policy approaches, that you can directly incorporate those socioeconomic considerations to influence your catch advice. The alternative approach might be a probability-based approach. And again, I won't get too into the details of how this works, but basically, for setting catch limits, management success is avoiding overfishing. And so in that way, the risk policy could be used to directly calculate what that acceptable probability of overfishing is. So right now, the New England stocks use a probability of 0.25, and this in a similar way would use that as the intermediate kind of, and you could go higher or lower than that based on the results of the risk policy. And that in combination with kind of that distribution of uncertainty around the overfishing limit would eventually determine exactly what the ABC is. So in the schematic on the right, we're seeing that 50% probability of overfishing, the highest allowable risk tolerance would be right at the overfishing limit. And then as the star, the allowable probability of overfishing, moves lower, you would move farther away. But the exact way, the mechanics for how that works depend both on the risk policy or this P star and some of the details around the uncertainty in the overfishing limit. So all that together, everything on the left side of the slide is the risk policy, which is what you'll be voting on in June. So we have the factor weighting. That's your policy decision on how important each of these five factors are to the overarching or ultimate level of risk tolerance for each stock individually. The factor scoring, which represents the objective characterization of the stock for each of those five factors. They get combined into this single Z score, which is used in the logistic function to calculate a recommended risk tolerance level for that particular stock. And that's where the risk policy kind of ends. Obviously, it influences the control rules that might use it, but it can also be used for other management decisions in other ways. And then on the right side, we see these alternative options for the way that the risk policy might integrate into ABC control rules. Obviously, there are lots of potential options and many decisions to be made within each of those options, including some proportion-based options that are similar to the current groundfish control rules, or a probability-based option that's similar to some of the other FMP control rules. And we will be doing some simulation testing alongside the Framework 68 process as we move into the summer, specifically aimed at using management strategy evaluation, which is a simulation approach, to test the performance of these alternative risk policy integrated control rules and compare them to the current groundfish control rule of default to 75% of FMSY unless you're in a rebuilding plan. I won't go into too many of the details for how the simulation testing works, but basically we simulate the population dynamics of the stock, observation of the catch accounting and the fishery independent surveys. We simulate a stock assessment. We simulate a harvest control rule, and we specify the level of ABC that can be extracted from the simulated population. And then we see how that moves forward in time. And it lets us use this simulation testing to kind of compare these different approaches and see which one leads to rebuilding faster, which one leads to a higher catch over the long term or short term. And it lets us help examine what the trade-offs between different management choices might be. And so we'll be using two focal stocks that have different risk policy results, Western Gulf of Maine Cod, which is one of the lower risk tolerance stocks coming out of the risk policy, and Gulf of Maine Haddock, which is the highest risk tolerance stock, to see how these potential alternative harvest control rules interact with different stock statuses, different population dynamics, and comparing these various alternative harvest control rules. So the status quo that specifies the ABC as a percentage of the OFL that changes with status, compared to risk policy integrated alternatives that might be that dynamic buffer that I showed you, which is the line that uses the risk policy results to continuously change the buffer between the OFL and the ABC, a potential tiered approach, potential probability-based options to kind of explore what the different trade-offs are for each of these approaches and how they might interact with the risk policy and for setting catch advice. Some of the things that we can look at with this simulation testing are how responsive those risk policy integrated controllers might be to changing conditions, how some various stock sustainability metrics, like how does stock status change over time? How long does it take to rebuild the simulated population? Harvest opportunities like magnitude of catch advice, realized catch compared to FMSY and things like that. And so after June and with the Groundfish Committee, we'll be using this simulation testing to explore all of these various risk policy integrated control rule options to help inform that next step decision of how this actually gets to an ABC.
So final slide. I think it's clear we've made some headway in terms of applying and calculating a Z-score and then this integration with harvest control rules. And so we've started to think about and talk about how the council will use the risk policy, how the SSC would use the risk policy. I think we've had a couple pretty fruitful conversations, both at the working group and at the SSC. I think we can take those further once we know what the risk policy is. And so from the June meeting, I think we would be a launching point for further discussions. There's kind of two tracks from there. There's this integrated approach that Roger just presented in part two. And then there's a qualitative use of the risk tolerance that we're planning to bring back in June. And I think right off the shelf, number two would be ready coming out of that meeting if the working group does its work and the council's convinced. I think the other piece that I would want the council to think about and guide the working group around is directing how its bodies use the risk policy. And I would say that's true for our plan teams. I'd say that's true for the SSC. We're looking for the council to think about how does it want the SSC to be applying the risk policy, both alongside with ABC control rules. And that was part of the, I think, the thinking, at least on staff, as we went through those conversations, as we kick off starting to think about the eventual use of the risk policy later this year. And I think that's it.
Thank you for part two. I turn to the council with questions. Obviously, this may have stimulated some questions just overall the risk policy itself, but also how risk policy and the ABC control rule will be integrated together. So I open up to council with questions, further questions for the team sitting at the table. Eric Hansen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And just for clarity on my part, looking at risk averse and risk tolerance and things like that, when you're setting catch advice for a complex, looks like we're going to be more strict on, say, Gulf of Maine cod than we will on haddock. But they're tied together as well, because if you can't catch the haddock, you can't catch the cod. So you're not going to utilize the species. So is that relationship dealt with here at all? Or are we just going to be on the Gulf of Maine cod, are we going to be restricting them so much that we won't be able to catch haddock? That's my main concern. I'm just trying to wrap my head around it.
So I'll give you an answer that's down in the weeds. I'll see if anyone else wants to give a high level. This is explicitly addressed as part of the commercial fishery characterization factor and around constraining stocks. The answer is that you need one to catch the other,
And in so that yes answer would mean to be more risk tolerant. That's the answer to that. You'd be more risk tolerant based on the relationship between those two stocks.
Dr. O'Keefe?
Thank you. As a follow-up, I might try to give an example of what we currently do. So like Gulf of Maine Haddock would be considered a healthy stock in our current control rule, and we would set advice based on 75% FMSY. Western Gulf of Maine is an overfished stock, and so we would use a different part of the control rule. So inherently, we are setting them at different risk tolerances in our current control rule. We would probably use 70 or lower percent FMSY. So in effect, we already do this, but it's only based on that stock status for groundfish. In the risk policy, we would be using a similar concept where we would be assessing our risk tolerance by stock, which we currently do, but we would be now able to consider all of the different factors that Jonathan and Roger have laid out, including that fishery factor, which specifically talks about choke stocks and revenues and utilization. So we're actually moving towards a system where we're being much more mindful of those interactions than our current system is now. Our current system doesn't consider that at all.
Okay, no, thank you for that clarity, because that makes a big difference.
Mr. Alexander.
Yeah, sorry. So looking at this simulation, I mean, we have 15, 16 years now of hot tax. Why couldn't you take this new approach and set, and look at what we did in, to set the quotas in 2015 and see how the fishery performed with that, and then use this new approach to see where what the difference would be? Better than imagining a simulation, you know what I mean? Actual hard information. I would think that would be a better exercise, but I don't know.
In principle, we can look historically and kind of do some of these risk policy calculations and things back in time and look at what percent of FMSY might have been applied in a particular year, but it's hard to know then how the stock and how the fishery would respond to that alternative reality back in time into those subsequent years. Whereas in the simulation, we know how many fish there are in the simulation. And so we can explicitly track how the changes we make in the management react and perform into the future. And so it helps. It's not emulating reality. We're not going to say there will be X number of fish in 2030, but it helps us compare the specific responses of the two different alternatives, because we can then go back and check in the simulation to see, oh, the population went up in this when we applied this approach, and it didn't go up when we applied this approach, or catch was higher when we applied this approach and it wasn't when we applied this approach. So we could look retroactively and see what the proportions might have been, but it's hard to then take the next step of saying this would have been the implication of that in the short, medium, and long-term future.
Makes sense. I was just curious. I had that question. So thank you.
Ms. O'Dell?
So maybe this is a little bit in the weeds and thinking through what the ABC control rule is going to be eventually discussed, in this case, by the Groundfish Committee. But how are stocks then handled that are in rebuilding plans?
We've started to think about this a little bit. I don't think I have a fully fleshed out answer, but I think my assumption would be that the risk policy might inform your kind of baseline catch advice, but then you would still have to have a rebuilding plan check to say, does this meet the rebuilding requirements? And so I expect that maybe if the risk policy integrated proportion or ABC performs well enough in those checks, maybe that would constitute it. And if it doesn't, then I'm not sure exactly how it would happen, but I don't think it would on its own completely remove the possibility of rebuilding plans, I think.
Yeah, just to follow up, you know, obviously when we were developing this risk policy, this is all caveat on we still need to abide by Magnuson. So if a stock is in the need of rebuilding, the stock is still going to need its rebuilding. This is just giving not only us as a council, but the SSC and the PDTs a better understanding of if there's wiggle room. But we still need, at the end of the day, to follow the rules of Magnuson. Further questions on the second component of ABC control rules? I'll go to the public. Attorney Minkiewicz.
Thank you. Drew Minkiewicz, SSF. I'm trying to think about how this is going to be implemented within the scallop framework, and you know, all the questions so far have been groundfish only focused, so I'll ask. In scallops, we're different, you know, whereas our annual spec setting process is, while has crossover elements, is wholly independent of the ABC setting. And, you know, as DeVore says, the ABC setting that we do doesn't really dictate management, but rather it checks the box for Magnuson. And she's right. We don't really refer to it as we do the individual specs. But when we do the ABC setting, it's a result of a Monte Carlo simulation, 10,000 runs, and then, you know, the median is chosen, and that becomes the thing. And, you know, and prior to this latest stock assessment, I would have fought you on any kind of change to that. This current stock assessment is not a hill I'm going to die on, but that's another conversation that I would hope the council would have more of, but we haven't. But, you know, unfortunately, with the Mid-Atlantic, and maybe it's because of the changing water temperature regimes we had, you know, high natural mortality, that seems to have thrown everything out of whack. So when she did the Monte Carlo simulations for Mid-Atlantic, the majority of the runs were outside of the bounds of what was found acceptable, and then you're basically choosing from a flat line of what the F rate was. And, you know, and even though the PDTs or the peer review called it implausible, they still approved it, which is kind of an implausible result in my mind, but that's another conversation too. So how would we use this in scallops when we are, because I don't want to get away from an objective data-driven process in setting our ABC when we take into all these other factors when we're doing the spec setting process, and then we have, you know, an active and very good AP that helps in that, and so on. So how would this all work together?
Yeah, there's a couple places where I think the risk policy could benefit scallop management. I don't think it can help directly with the benchmark assessment we just went through, the research track. You know, one of the things we'll need to think about, and I don't think it's ready for prime time, is how the risk policy would integrate with the existing harvest control rule for scallops. I think that's one way. How do you develop the ABC? And I think we'll learn a lot through Framework 68 and the process that the council goes through. The place that I think there's value in terms of the management decisions is going through the exercise of having a risk tolerance that comes out of this process, and using that in the whole suite of other management decisions that the committee and then the council are faced with making about the state of the resource. And so you think about the F rates that get applied in rotational areas, you think about the number of days at sea that get allocated. I think that qualitative interpretation that we're talking about is a piece of information that can help the discussion. I don't think those discussions are fundamentally changed. I think it's another data point that the council and the committee and the advisor industry can use as rationale for making decisions within the FMP.
No, I appreciate the response. And, you know, I would just say, I think a lot of that, you know, if you listen to the conversation in when days at sea are selected and when we talk about rotational, you know, a lot of that's happening. There is a lot of talk of risk, and I don't know how much you can actually just put a specific number on it and apply it uniformly in that manner, because every year is different than the situation facing the fishery. And also, it doesn't sound like it's going to be of much use on the ABC side of things. And yes, I agree, it can't fix the assessment. We need a new assessment. That's the only way to fix the current assessment, but that's another fight.
Thank you for that. Mary Beth Tooley.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mary Beth Tooley, O'Hara Corporation. And I had a question relative to herring. And we're going to be doing a specification package later in this year. And you'll have information coming back to you on that in June. And we get a response from the new model and how that would be producing projections for the fishery in late June. Now, the herring control rule is the most conservative control rule the council has. It is not a set 0.75 applied to come up with an F rate. And that F rate varies with the status of the stock relative to the target for that stock. And currently, without getting into, rebuilding programs, I mean, that's another complexity, but not going there, because the stock is at a low level, the F rate applied has been at 0.5 and can be less. So that combination, when this conversation originally started, my understanding was because of that control rule, it would not be applied. This risk policy would be applied. I think that's changed, and now it is going to be combined under all of the FMPs, but I really have a lot of concerns about that outcome and how one would apply that on top of, a sliding scale F rate, depending on whatever your target might be. I don't think that's going to change in this coming year, but the current status of that stock. And that there are so many questions out there, it makes me nervous. It's relative to trying to implement that in the specification package have before you, on top of which we are looking at our specification packages going from an annual two-year review to a number that could be as high as every 5 years, and that's not yet determined. So if anybody has any input on that, I'd be grateful.
Jonathan?
Yeah, thanks, Mary Beth. Thanks for bringing this up. So there's no change in the planned approach for using risk policy with the development of herring specifications. So the risk policy is not going to be directly integrated quantitatively with the ABC control rule this year. I think the council put a lot of work into that. The working group was really explicit in trying to keep that one plan separate and seeing how things would proceed and get developed over time. So that has not changed. I think there is this larger question that the council has different ABC control rules for every FMP. Each time this comes up, the SSC has to apply a different ABC control rule. There was discussion early on about moving towards fewer control rules. I think that's a reasonable idea. But in the short term, that's not the plan. I think one thing that we would like to ask the plan teams to do is to go through and apply to generate a risk tolerance to end up with a Z score for each of our FMPs this year. There's four FMPs that will be setting specifications. So we've got small mesh, scallops, groundfish, and herring. I think it's pretty reasonable to ask those groups to go through the exercise and generate a risk tolerance and apply a risk tier. That would be kind of my own vision for how this gets used. And I think that could be done by August when the SSC meets, but no expectation that to use the risk policy directly with the harvest control rule.
For the record, thank you very much.
Glad we can help, Mary Beth. I'll look back to the council. Any further questions on what's been presented with risk policy and or the ABC control rule implementation? Sorry, Ms. Ware.
Yeah, I was waiting just in case someone had questions, but I just wanted to give a few comments in response to what I think I've heard today. And how I like to think of the risk policy is it's a hopefully systematic and transparent way to come up with a risk tolerance for a fishery management plan, considering factors beyond just the biomass that we get out of an assessment. It's considering the economics of the fishery, the communities, climate change. And then you can basically leverage that into an ABC control rule. And I'll describe, or I'll hearken us back to, I think it was Gulf of Maine haddock, where we had like a crazy high biomass and we were at 75% FMSY. And I think the council remanded back to the SSC to ask for a higher percent FMSY. We went through that process. Ultimately, I think there was an emergency rule by the agency to go to OFL equal to ABC. And then we went through another framework process to, I think, eventually end up at 90% FMSY. And that all could have been avoided if we had a risk policy integrated with an ABC control rule. We would have gotten there in the first step, and we would have avoided kind of that circus that we went through. So I'm hoping that people see that as a potential vision, time saver, all of the good things that I think this could be. I hear people's concerns and desires for as much integration of different data elements as we can, but I just would like to remind folks to, I think, some of the things that catalyzed us to consider a revision to the risk policy. I'm really encouraged that we're getting results that make sense. We are getting Gulf of Maine haddock having a very high risk tolerance. That makes sense. We're getting the cod stocks with a lower risk tolerance. That kind of checks out with, I think, what we thought would happen. So I see a lot of hope here, and I am happy to meet with folks one-on-one if they want to ask more questions. I get it's a big change. I'm here to try and help. Thanks.
Thank you for that, Ms. Ware. Any further from risk policy?
I think that's it.
Thank you very much. Thank you, gentlemen, for your presentations. We will take a 10-minute break, and we will come back and focus on Atlantic Herring Committee report from Chair Whelan. Thank you.